This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen from RotoWire here. Huge show today. So much going on. Breaking news. We got two amazing NBA games to recap. Baseball to recap. We got golf today. Len Hochberg is going to join us to help us preview the Truist Championship. Alex Baruth is going to hop on before that. Preview tonight's games and help us also recap what just happened last night. And we'll do some home run props and other baseball props in the for the Wednesday slate later on in the show as well. Nick, we got to start off, though, in an NFL trade. George Pickens. It's always great when I get woken up to trade news. I didn't get woken up by it, but I wake up to it. George Pickens to Dallas. It wasn't one of those break through the phone and wake me up sort of things. But still, big enough news that we're going to lead with that there. What did you think about, A, the trade, and B, the timing of the trade?
Well, I will tell you, Jeff, I actually was truly woken up by this. The alerts on my phone and then a series of texts from all my friends discussing this. So, you know, usually when my phone is buzzing that early, I'm like, you know, scrambling to wake up thinking it's some sort of emergency. And I guess this is a sports emergency, we could say. And right off the bat, you know, the first thing I went to check is, you know, do we see any adjustment in terms of these team win totals? Probably not quite a big enough deal for that. Cowboys win total still currently at 7.5 at DraftKings. Steelers sitting at 8.5 as we await any word from Aaron Rodgers as to whether he is interested in being their quarterback next season. But, you know, I think we knew Dallas wanted to do something. You know, that the Cowboys are always, you know, seemingly involved, or at least they say they're involved whenever there's some sort of discussion, especially for a skill position player, especially for someone like George Pickens, who just feels like a Dallas Cowboy. This was a very Dallas Cowboys move to make. And, you know, I think the first thing you have to talk about outside of his immediate impact, Jeff, is that Pickens is in the final year of his rookie deal. So you would think that this is a situation where the Steelers said, OK, we like George Pickens, the player. Maybe we don't necessarily love the personality. We don't want to commit $100+ million to this guy beyond 2025. So you would think the Cowboys would be the team that, given what they surrendered in order to get George Pickens, would sign him to an extension. But I do wonder, did they give up enough in this trade, Jeff? You know, essentially a third rounder, and then you're swapping some late round picks, a fifth for a sixth. Is that enough now where there's this obligation to feel like you have to bring back George Pickens as a longer term part of this core? We'll see how it goes. I think they basically are giving themselves a 1 year trial. I will say, by the way, Jeff, ironically, George Pickens has the same agent as Micah Parsons, and we know how those negotiations have gone with Dallas.
Yeah, or any long term negotiations with Dallas, as the case may seem. I wouldn't think that Pickens is a priority. I think he's got to kind of play his way into that extension a little bit there. There's no denying that Dallas needed the second receiver, Jalen Tolbert was otherwise your number two receiver on that team, or Kevontae Turpin. They didn't, address that aggressively in the draft. They did address running back by getting Jaden Blue. I think a fifth round pick with him, and a really rich running back class. So that's a little different, but still. Yeah, you know, I think this is one of those, okay, if we're going to contend this year, we need a second receiver. Pickens is that. But the question is for Pittsburgh, and I don't understand Pittsburgh's offseason at all here, Nick. This is a team that, you know, they do a kind of a go-for-it trade by trading for DK Metcalf, give up their second-round pick. I can get behind not drafting an early quarterback. If you find that you think Jackson Dart or Shedeur Sanders is lacking, don't force it. I think it's important not to force it, especially with the first round pick. So I liked some of the players that the Steelers got, but you know, they still don't have a quarterback. And is Aaron Rodgers even going to be a guy we can bank on? I mean, clearly I don't feel like he's enthused to play for Pittsburgh. I just don't see this necessarily ending well. And yet this isn't a teardown team. This is still, we're going to make the playoffs. We're going to win 9-10 games every year. Mike Tomlin's still the coach. You know, it's like, where, pick a lane is kind of what I'm getting at here.
Well, if it's not Aaron Rodgers, that streak of, seasons above 500, streak of making the playoffs might come to an end. Because if it's not Aaron Rodgers, you're looking at Mason Rudolph. They drafted Will Howard, and then they brought in, the GOAT, Skylar Thompson, for depth purposes. So as of right now, it's Mason Rudolph as the starter in Pittsburgh. And look, if I'm DK Metcalf, I'm not thrilled about that. I'm not shocked necessarily that the Steelers ended up dealing Pickens. And if you've read up on this, this is something that they've been discussing since before the NFL draft, probably ideally wanted to get this done before or during the draft, but that did not end up happening. And I think you look at what's left now for the Steelers, that wide receiver room is DK Metcalf and everybody else. They brought in Robert Woods, yep, who's, you know, at the end of his career. You still have Calvin Austin. You know, the interesting guy to me, perhaps more so from a fantasy perspective, is Roman Wilson, you know, out of Michigan, played just 5 snaps last season due to injury. He was a 3rd-round pick in 2024. Now, the Steelers did not add any wide receivers in this draft, not even in the later rounds. You know, they've only taken 3 wide receivers over the last 5 drafts combined, those being Wilson, Pickens, and Calvin Austin. So there hasn't been a ton of investment at this position. But to me, Jeff, this is the Steelers signaling that, look, they're not comfortable paying George Pickens long term. They're more comfortable allocating that money to somebody that they view as more dependable and maybe with higher upside in DK Metcalf, even if he's a slightly older piece than George Pickens. On the other side of this, Pickens is now playing with easily the best quarterback of his career. I think there's a case to be made that maybe Russell Wilson was that answer last season. Dak, obviously a much better player than this current version of Wilson. And he's going to have a strong number one receiver opposite him in CeeDee Lamb. He's never really had that in Pittsburgh.
Yep, absolutely there. So does this make you want to draft Pickens a little bit more than he was already?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's a bump for me. You know, he was going to be in somewhat of a similar situation in Pittsburgh, you know, playing alongside another established player in DK Metcalf. And obviously CeeDee Lamb is a higher level piece than Metcalf, but I just feel a lot more comfortable with the quarterback situation in Dallas right now. I don't know how you couldn't.
Yeah, exactly there. Early returns from the NFFC, where we like to kind of get our ADP from. He usually goes around pick 80. More importantly, vis-a-vis other receivers, Pickens is around pick wide receiver 35 behind rookie Tet McMillan, ahead of Juwan Jennings. I like Jennings better, to be honest, ahead of Jacoby Myers, ahead of Calvin Ridley. That's the end of the neighborhood that Pickens is going at right now. I wouldn't take him over like McMillan, Waddle, Olave. I think I'd stick with Pickens in the area that he's at right now.
I think we'll see a slight jump in that ADP over the next couple of weeks. But yeah, when you're looking at it from a would you take this guy or this guy perspective, I think he actually is in the right zone. You know, Pickens versus McMillan to me is tough. I think I would actually lean Pickens there. But once you get into Olave, Addison, you know, Roma Dunze, Chris Godwin, those guys are going about a round and a half ahead of Pickens right now, becomes a little bit more difficult. But this is a bump for me fantasy wise, the move from Pittsburgh to Dallas.
All right. Very good. Let's pivot on over the NBA, but before we do that, real quick, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. All right, Nick, I've held off long enough. We got to talk Pacers Cavs. Insane game, insane finish. Road teams are now 5-0 in round 2. The ultimate smash and grab game. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've said that about like 5 games, it feels like, in the last 2 weeks, Jeff. And yet you're not wrong. I mean, these playoffs have been unbelievable. Road teams are now 5-0 straight up in round 2. It's the first time that all 4 road teams have even won a game 1, let alone the Pacers now being 2-0 on the road in their series. Road teams 9-1. Against the spread in the last 10 NBA postseason games. I know our guy JVT tweeted that out last night. Good note from him. All due respect to the Pacers here, Jeff. This was yet another incredible effort by them. You know, one of my friends texted me last night and said, he's like, I'm getting Miami Heat vibes from this Pacers team. You know, we've seen that Heat run to the finals in 2020, the Heat's run a couple of years ago. It does kind of feel similar to me, where you just can't count this team out of any games. But this was just an unbelievably unlikely comeback and a complete meltdown by the Cleveland Cavaliers, who led this game by 7 with about 45 seconds left. I'm sure you've probably seen this stat, Jeff, when you were, whatever the opposite of doom scrolling is last night after this Pacers game. But since the 1997-98 season, teams are 3-1640 when trailing by 7+ in the final minute of a fourth quarter or overtime in the NBA. 2 of those 3 wins in that sample have been the Pacers within the last week and a half. This game last night against the Cavs, and then, of course, the Game 5 win over the Milwaukee Bucks. I thought there were a number of things that you could point to. Cleveland certainly got tight. I didn't love the shot selection down the stretch. It just felt like if Donovan Mitchell wasn't getting to the rim, they were not generating a quality look whatsoever. Pacers also had 7 offensive rebounds in the second half. And I was surprised when I checked that number. It felt like more because every single offensive rebound they brought down was massive. They had two huge ones late in the game on free throws, one by Aaron Nesmith. And then, of course, the one by Tyrese Haliburton where he gets his own rebound, dribbles out, and hits the game winner. Pacers put up 70 points in the second half. They shot 55% from the field over the final two quarters. And look, Cavs are in a really difficult spot now. Obviously, you're down three important pieces last night, but they have had two of their worst shooting games of the entire season now to begin this series. And look, there was a point. We were texting about it last night, Jeff, you, me, and producer Michael, when it looked like Max Strus and Sam Merrill were just going to shoot the Cavs to a big win. Unbelievable comeback by Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the Max Strus game. We saw a Max Strus dunk. I said, I wasn't prepared to have a Max Strus montage, but here we are. You know, it was 17 points at the end, near the end of the third quarter. They hit that dagger three, and I'm like, I walked out of the room for a couple of minutes. I was just,
yep.
I thought it was over. No miracle comeback today. Even though they were down three starters, our three major players, Hunter, I count Hunter as a starter because of the minutes he plays. You know, the framing of this game for three quarters is like the Pacers gacked away this huge opportunity. And instead, it's a completely different framing after that fourth quarter. It's wild. Absolutely wild to see that there. Obviously, the series odds are now finally shifted in the Pacers' favor. I mean, they go back home and they're up 2-0. You have to be a favorite now, although it's noteworthy. Cavs are a 1.5-point favorite for game three.
Yeah, the Pacers are now minus 205 to win this series. But if you look at the correct score markets over at DraftKings, the short shot is still Cavs in seven. Cavs to win that series 4-3 plus 270. And part of the reason for that is there's so many different ways you could parse Indiana winning this thing. But we'll talk more about it later in the show with Alex Perutha.
Who is coming up next? Progressive Guest Line on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson here with you. We got two great guests joining us in these next two segments, including our friend Alex Perutha to help us continue breaking down what we saw in the NBA last night. Before we get to Alex, we'll give you a real quick update. What's going on in Major League Baseball? Three games ongoing and one starting up in just a couple of minutes. That is Giants-Cubs. Astros currently leading the Brewers 1-0. We're in the top of the fifth there. Guardians just had a huge sixth inning. They now lead the Nationals 8-3. And the St. Louis Cardinals holding on to a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the fourth over Mitch Keller and the Pittsburgh Pirates. All right, Alex Perutha, senior NBA editor for us at RotoWire, joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Alex, we had almost too much to get to in segment one. We buried the lead on maybe the biggest news in the NBA today. That is Stephen Curry out, not only for game two, but expected to miss multiple games dealing with that strained hamstring. The first muscle strain of any kind of his entire career, which is remarkable given how long we've been watching Steph Curry in the NBA. Obviously, it feels like a big missed opportunity last night for the Minnesota Timberwolves. You know, they have another disaster shooting night. They missed their first 16 three-pointers to begin that game. And yet, you know, I was checking the live line at halftime. Once we knew Steph wasn't coming back, Timberwolves were just plus 1.5. They made a comeback, you know, midway through the fourth, but it still never really felt like the Wolves took control of that game. One, how big of a missed opportunity was that for Minnesota? And two, you know, you look at the series odds now, you take Steph Curry away, are you now on the Timberwolves, despite what we saw last night, to win this series?
Yeah, I think minus 185 for the Wolves to win the series is pretty good value if Curry's going to miss about a week. And when he comes back, is he going to be 100%? Is he going to play 36 minutes, 40 minutes that first game back? I don't know. But yeah, it was definitely a missed opportunity for the Timberwolves. You said it. I mean, they're one of the worst second quarters, basically, in modern NBA history. Scored 11 points.
Yes.
And in that first quarter, I mean, really the thing that stuck out to me was just they were playing with this crazy nervous energy. There were like air balls, everybody's flying around. It's just like the ball was going in, but it didn't feel like sustainable. I think they kind of punched themselves out, and you saw that happen in the second quarter. But once the third and especially the fourth came around, Anthony Edwards started going to the basket a bit more. Chris Finch brought in Rudy Gobert, which I thought he had been out for far too long given how stagnant Minnesota's offense had been. I think they have a really good opportunity definitely to win game two and potentially the whole series.
I was shocked by what we saw from Anthony Edwards in particular, you know, coming off of the layoff. Like, it almost looked to me like the Timberwolves were the team that had 2 days off and had to turn around after playing a game seven. It's like Julius Randle's like sitting there at half court, huffing and puffing midway through the first quarter. I don't know what the Wolves did over the last 4 or 5 days, but that was just a team that was not ready whatsoever. And I mean, just a bizarre game from Anthony Edwards. Like you mentioned, he did a good job of getting to the rim in the second half, and he did, but in the first half, especially, and even into the second, like he was blowing layups, right? Like I'd never really seen that lack of touch from somebody like Edwards over and over again. And, you know, I think one thing that does worry me a little bit if I'm Minnesota is obviously no Steph Curry offensively for the Warriors. That's devastating. They're a disastrous offense without him, but they're a much better defense with no Steph Curry on the floor. And we saw that come through in the second half. And I think the obvious thing is, okay, the Wolves won't shoot it that badly again. Well, we said that coming out of game five against the Lakers, and they've played, what, 6 playoff games now, and they've had downright horrendous three-point shooting in half of those. Game two against the Lakers, 5 of 25. Game five against the Lakers, 7 of 47. Game one against Golden State, 5 of 29 from three. That is 17 of 101 combined. So can we just make this assumption that, okay, the shooting will eventually come around for the Timberwolves, or is there something Golden State is doing defensively that's causing this?
I think it can be both. I mean, they went 0 for 15 in the first half, the Timberwolves did, which is just, again, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the longer layoff. They seemed really just almost too amped for this game. I mean, the crowd was like out of control too in the first half. I don't know. Some of it, you know, I do think Anthony Edwards can get a little shot happy from three. I don't know how much you really want Jaden McDaniels taking threes. I don't think Golden State was too upset when Jaden McDaniels was like, all right, I got this. And I mean, Conley only has so much to give. I don't know. I think he will come around eventually. These things tend to do so. But yeah, I mean, Golden State obviously played amazing defense against Houston in their previous series. So it's not too surprising that Minnesota struggled offensively.
So what is your read right now on this Cavs Pacers series? Cavs now trailing 0-2, blew a big second half lead, of course, last night. You know, we mentioned it earlier in the show. Cavs in 7 is still plus 270 right now at DraftKings. But then you got Pacers in 4 at 3-1, Pacers in 6 at plus 425, Pacers in 5 at 6-1. Knowing what we know now, which is not much about these injuries for Garland and Mobley and DeAndre Hunter, do you see a world in which the Cavaliers can climb their way back into the series as it shifts to Indiana?
It's possible, just because if those guys can get healthy, they have the talent to do so. They're so good offensively. But I don't know if it's value at plus 175 to bet them to win the series. I mean, you could get Indiana minus 1.5 games at minus 130. I think I would just rather take that. Why? Because we all know Cleveland's health. It's just you're going into Indiana. You got to win these games. I don't know. Indiana's a very good team. I mean, they're perpetually underrated. Yeah. The last 2/3 of the season, they were basically a top 6, top 8 team. I would be surprised if the Cavs won the series at this point.
We'll break down tonight's playoff games with Alex Barutha in a moment. But first, smarter bets start here and last all year long with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription, normally $240. Now, you can get it for just $199. And when you sign up today, we'll throw in 2 extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code PRO. That's P-R-O. You get 14 months of access to our daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides. You can head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Do it right now. Use that promo code PRO to lock in 14 months of VSiN Pro for just $199. That's VSIN.com/subscribe.
Alex, in the SiriusXM RotoWire show this morning, we talked a little bit about Knicks Boston. Hard to jump on a side with the game with the line being 10.5. There's a lot of different countervailing statistics that are pushing us each way. So in addition to the side, are there player props in this game that you like?
There are. The side, I think if you made me, I would lean Boston minus 10.5, but it's just a really big number. And OKC Denver is 10.5 too. It just feels quite big for a playoff game when teams are relatively close in competition. But in this Boston Knicks game, I like Jason Tatum over 15.5 rebounds plus assists. Tatum was Boston's primary distributor in game one. I mean, they're searching a lot. They're looking for the ISO opportunities against Brunson, against Cat. But the ball just finds Tatum, right, at the end of the shot clock, and he can make a play. And the rebounds, too. He had 16 boards in game one. And, you know, there's some advanced numbers that back that up. They were all close to the rim, high chance percentage on those boards. But ultimately, like, we don't know what's going on with Porzingis. He's probable for this game. I don't know if he's going to play. And if he does, he might be out on the perimeter guarding Cat. It's hard to say. I just think we're getting a pretty nice number, 15.5 rebounds plus assists. When in the entire playoffs, he's averaging 12.2 rebounds and 5.4 assists. He's just extremely involved in those two areas.
Alex, I know you're taking a look at Mikal Bridges over 1.5 steals as well for that game, plus 235, like the price on that one. Let's go to Nuggets Thunder, game two of that series, tipping off later tonight. Like you said, another game with the same spread, double digits, 10.5 in favor of OKC. I know you got a few props that you like in this game, and we will start with the Alex Berutha mega whale play of the year. And of course, it comes on a role player defensive prop.
Alex Caruso, over 1.5 steals. I found this at the Hard Rock Sportsbook at -105, when at the FanDuel Sportsbook, he was at -158. Caruso, even if you include the game one against Memphis, where he had 0 steals in 12 minutes, he's averaging 2.8 steals in the playoffs. He averaged 1.5 during the regular season in 19 minutes a game. The deflection numbers are off the charts, 5 a game. Basically, every number backs this up. I understand, like... Of course, it's possible this won't hit, but the numbers would say if you bet this every game so far, you'd win every game except once. It's just he has been out of control as a defender. I think he's going to stay really involved in this series.
All right, we got about 30 seconds, Alex. So we like Caruso over 1.5 steals. I know you're looking at a Jokic and an SGA prop as well.
Jokic over 13.5 rebounds. He only averaged 12 rebounds in the previous series against the Clippers. He averaged basically 16 rebounds a game against OKC during the regular season, had 22 in game one. I don't really know what's changing there. It's a high number, but I like it. SGA over 6.5 assists. He had 21 potential assists in game one. I think that the Nuggets are going to continue trying to force the ball out of his hands.
I like him. I like them all, Alex. Great card you got going for these game twos tonight. We'll also take a look maybe at SGA to lead the game in assists at +255. Had those 21 potential assists, just 12 potential assists for Nikola Jokic in game one. We're going to talk some golf. Len Hochberg previewing the Truist coming up next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. We talk golf frequently on Wednesdays, and that is the case this week with an elevated event. Joining us on the Progressive Guest Line is our good friend Len Hochberg. You can follow Len at Len Hochberg on Twitter. You can also read him on RotoWire. Go use that promo code ROTO15 to subscribe to RotoWire and check Len's workout. Len, always great to have you on. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome. Let's talk a little Truist Championship. Interesting because it's a new location this year because Quail Hollow is hosting the PGA next week.
Yeah, and it's always a challenging week for these one-offs when courses in every Quail Hollow hosted the PGA in 2017. It was the same thing, President's Cup in 2022. This week we are at the Wissahickon course at Philadelphia Cricket Club, over a century old. All the reports are it's a great course. Wouldn't think anything else to get a PGA Tour event. It's a very, very short track, but it is a challenging week because we just don't know exactly. There's not hardly any course history. A 2015 Senior Tour event is the crux of it.
Len, no Scottie Scheffler in the field this week, which means it is Rory McIlroy's turn to be a heavy, heavy favorite. He's basically on his own tier. If you look at the odds board over at DraftKings, 4-1 to win the tournament. You got Morikawa 14-1, Shoffley 16-1, JT 16-1, and Oberg also 16-1. Now, Rory has won this tournament 3 times, including in 2021 and last year, Len, but Those wins, of course, came at Quail Hollow. So what can we take, if anything, from that past history when we're moving to a different course?
Well, we really can't take any past history. What we can take is that Rory McIlroy has been the best golfer in the world this year. He's won three times. He's won on long courses. He's won on hard courses. He won on a short course at Pebble Beach. I think one of the big things about Rory McIlroy this year is he's finally convinced himself that he's had to proceed a different way to win the tournament, to win the Masters, and maybe be a little bit more conservative and take his foot off the gas when need be. And that will help him this week. He's just excelling in every area. He's just not the long driver that we always knew him to be. He's ninth on the PGA Tour in putting. He is 4.5 to 1, which is a little bit more than Scottie Scheffler would be. I'm noticing in the odds and in the DraftKings prices, the DFS prices, that he is not getting quite the love, for lack of a better term, that Scheffler would when Scheffler has been playing. It's interesting.
As you alluded to, this is hard with a one-off course to try to figure out the course strengths and weaknesses, but let's try to do it anyhow. I know this is a little bit of a shorter course than Quail Hollow. Now, maybe not even a little bit, maybe a lot bit shorter than Quail Hollow.
Yeah, 500 yards shorter, only about 7,100 yards for a par 70, trying to figure out what will make it hard. Well, first of all, the over-under is 19.5, roughly in there. So it's not going to be an 8-under, 7-under single-digit course, but it won't be a – they don't expect a full-blown birdie fest. The course is short, so you would think that there would be trees and narrow fairways. No and no. It's pretty easy driving experience here. What's really going to be challenging is on and around the greens. Around a lot of bunkers on this course, 118, that is the most on tour. They are strategically placed in the fairways, so driving accuracy will matter which angle you get to come into the green on. And the bunkers are surrounding the greens, one on the fifth hole, six bunkers just completely circling the green there. And once you're on the green, undulations, runoffs, roughly around 12 on the stimp. So I think we're looking at guys who can handle, you know, situations from 100 yards and in and on the green.
Len Hochberg, our golf expert over at rotowire.com. He joins us on the Progressive guest line here on Prop Points. Len, I think whether you were talking DFS, whether we're talking betting this tournament, you of course have to consider Rory McIlroy, but I know you have some interest in Justin Thomas as well. You know, coming off of that win a few weeks ago at the RBC, he's been in good form lately. We can get him at 16-1 to win the tournament. He's 3-1 for a top five, plus 140 for a top 10. What is it specifically that attracts you to Justin Thomas this week?
Well, Justin Thomas won the RBC Heritage at Harbortown, another short golf course. I'm looking at guys who have either or don't hit the ball very far or have trouble keeping the ball in the fairway. And presumably this week, they won't need to have driver. They'll club down, better able to get the ball in the fairway. Justin Thomas's big trouble this week, this season, has been keeping the ball in the fairway off his drives. That obviously did not hurt him, and it didn't really come up at Harbortown. So that's one reason why I like him. He is spectacular around the greens with wedge play, chipping one of the best in the world at that, and his putting is far, far improved this season. So he's got a lot of things going for him. He won that tournament with that fill-in caddy, Joe Greiner, who has now moved over to Colin Morikawa, by the way. So he's back with Max Minister, Thomas is, with his regular caddy. And so it'll be interesting to see that dynamic this week.
Before we talk about the next tier of golfers to bet on, first, take your betting to the next level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or the road to the Triple Crown, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, STBet.com, and use promo code VEASAN200 to score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. Okay, Len, we've talked about some of the golfers at the favorite level. Let's look beyond the next tier. I know a couple that you're interested in are Russell Henley at 30-1 and Tommy Fleetwood at 25-1.
Yeah, I do like both of those guys. And Henley, you know, he's been fantastic this year. He's got a win at Bay Hill, a long course, but he's also has five top tens in nine starts. His big issue, driving distance. He is such a short hitter. That's why that win at Bay Hill was so impressive. Well, it's not going to be a concern for him this week, and he does everything well. Top 20 in strokes gained metrics everywhere but off the tee. Tommy Fleetwood, another guy. Not the shortest hitter, but not the longest hitter either. Very accurate. You need to get the ball on the green. You don't want to be messing with the bunkers around the greens and get it. So approach play will be very important. But if he misses, Tommy Fleetwood also very good with wedge in hand.
Len, if we look a little bit further down the board, we're not into long shot territory here, but guys who are priced in the 8,000s, if you're looking at DraftKings DFS, Corey Connors at 30-1 to win the tournament, Shane Lowry 35-1. What do you like about those two?
Again, they are just get the ball in the fairway, get the ball on the green. They're just very accurate. Neither one, and especially long hitter, he's had difficulty getting into the top 25 because his putting has been way off in years past. He just hasn't been a very good putter. But this year, vastly improved putting for Corey Connors. He's been ringing up some top 10s, and there's no reason he can't do it again this week. Shane Lowry, getting into his late 30s, probably one of his best seasons. Yes, he hasn't won a major like he did a number of years back, but really consistent basis. He's there every week on the PGA Tour.
Len, let's talk some long shots here. We've it's an elevated event. Our quality of golfer in our long shots is better than it usually is. Who do you like in that tier?
Well, one of the good things about this tournament, at least from that perspective, Jeff, is that 72 guys, no cut event. You won't be burned on a Friday if you're playing DFS or anything. You do get four rounds, and that's a lot of time to make up ground. And you also, if you are behind heading into the weekend, you don't have to pass that many guys to get a good finish, whether you're playing DFS or you're maybe betting somebody for a top 20 or a top 10 or something like that. Brian Harman, since winning the Valero, he came back and he had another good week at the RBC Heritage, a short course. Again, he doesn't hit the ball that far. He does well on long courses, but he does even better on the shorter tracks, and I do like him. And Akshay Bhatia, I think he has a lot going for him in the DFS world. I saw he was 7,100. That price stood out for me right away as being a little bit light. I think he can really justify that price and maybe more of like an $8,000 golfer. And I like to have one guy who's way, way back there and always take a shot because you can take some big swings with the no-cut event. Brian Campbell, 185th on tour in driving distance. That's near the bottom. He is in so much trouble on so many of the longer tracks that he has to do everything precision. And he has a little bit more flexibility this week. He's a great approach player. And why not take a swing on him or take a swing on somebody at least who maybe you like?
Len, we got about 20 seconds left. One and done pools philosophy. Do you burn Rory if you still have him or do you save him for a major?
Yeah, no, I'm not burning Rory. In fact, I don't even really want to take a top guy. There's too many unknowns this week. We don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to go with Russell Henley. I know he is a top guy at 7th in the world, 8th in the world, something like that. But I don't consider him in the top echelon with Thomas and Morikawa and others. So I'm going to go with him and play a little bit conservative this week. Going to use him at some point this season anyway.
Very good. Brilliant as always, Len. Thanks for coming on board. We'll do this again soon. Thanks for joining us. Len Hochberg, everybody. Baseball bets coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back in on Prop Points, Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson here with you, taking you up to the top of the hour. Make sure you keep it locked right here on VSiN. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up in about 15 minutes. He's going to have Ariel Epstein on the show to give her best bets for the NBA and Major League Baseball slates. Speaking of baseball, Jeff, I know you have a bunch of best bets in the holster for us, but we'll give you a quick score update first. Houston Astros all over the Milwaukee Brewers right now. We got two outs in the top of the sixth and just had a Jeremy Peña home run, Jeff, that now puts the Astros up 6-1. Again, two outs in the top of the sixth there. Guardians, Nationals, a lot of runs on the board, a lot of hits on the board. 21 hits in this game, zero home runs. Jeff, Guardians now leading the Nats 8-6 in the bottom of the eighth. Cardinals up 3-0 on the Pittsburgh Pirates, and we're in the top of the second between the Giants and the Cubs. Giants holding a 1-0 lead early on. That is Robbie Ray going up against Ben Brown. Let's take a look.
Quick
at the
note on that Giants.
Or go ahead.
Sorry to interject. Quick note on Giants Cubs. I don't know how much you got to see last night because I know you're laser focused on basketball, Nick. What? But bullpen meltdown in Chicago last night with the Giants. Yet the Giants turned around and rallied in the 10th inning. Just a lot of wild games. You know, I was on the Cubs over 4.5, and I was looking pretty wrong. They got three off of Verlander in 5 innings, got stymied for 4 innings, and then finally rallied in the 9th inning. You know, closer trouble there with Ryan Walker. He may be out of a closer role very soon. He's had an ERA over 6. He's really starting to struggle there, taking a lot of water. So something to watch there for the Giants. Sorry, keep going. Mm-hmm.
No, you're good. You're good, man. Let's take a look at the later slate tonight. We'll go over to the American League. The Mariners at the Athletics. Seattle -155 on the money line. Total sitting at 9. This is Gunnar Hoglund, one of my favorite names in Major League Baseball, going up against Brian Wu. Saw the Mariners. They stay hot. They won again last night with the late rally. One of the best offenses in baseball, Jeff. Kind of doing it in strange ways, right? This is not a team that we necessarily thought would be putting the numbers up offensively that they are so far, but been a fun team to watch. And look, the A's have been right there as well. I think this has been close to a best case scenario start for this Athletics team.
Yeah, best walk rate in baseball. They it was not that last year. They made a concentrated effort to get on base by walking more. Over 11% walk rate for a team. That's good for one individual player. For a whole team to average an 11.1% walk rate, that means that it's a point of emphasis for this team, and it's really working. They've got a road WRC plus of 128, second in baseball, only behind the Cubs. They won with a late rally last night. I know Hoglund was really good in his first start, and he's superbly named, but I think there's going to be a bit of correction here. He held the Marlins to one run last time out. I think that I do think that the Mariners will get to Hoglund. I'm going to go with the other side of the coin, though, with Brian Wu, who I love as a starting pitcher. Fantastic against the A's in the past. He's held them to a 445 OPS. We're going to go over 18.5 outs recorded at +155. Keep in mind, the bullpen for the Mariners has been worked really hard the last 2 days. They had that extra inning game on Monday night. They won in late innings last night there where the key relievers are pitching. So I think they're going to ask him to go get that work into the 7th inning. So we'll go over 18.5 outs for Brian Wu.
All right, another game coming up in the afternoon window. This one starting in about 45 minutes. Mets, Diamondbacks, Kodai Senga taking on Merrill Kelly. I know you got a money line play here, Jeff, and a home run prop for tonight.
Yes, sir. I like the pitching matchup in favor of the Mets. Kodai Senga has been fantastic this year. So even though the Diamondbacks won last night behind Zach Gallen, I think the Mets pick themselves off the turf. Pete Alonso has 3 homers and 16 career at-bats against Merrill Kelly. Kelly also left with a hamstring issue in his last start. He may not be able to go deep in the game. So even though he's only allowed 5 homers and 7 starts this year, I think Alonso gets him today. It's only +300. That's the only negative. I'd like to be a little bit longer odds, but it's Pete Alonso. He's mashing this year. 9 homers, 1122 OPS on the season. I also like the Mets on the money line at -125. I think that's a pretty good price. Even as a road favorite, I'll go ahead and back that with the Mets.
Fun pitching matchup when we take a look at the Padres and the Yankees. Yankees big win last night. They're -185 on the money line. Total for this one, a little bit lower than I would expect, but maybe not, given that it is Dylan Cease going up against Max Fried. Total is at 8, Jeff. And we've already talked about a couple closer bullpen meltdowns that we saw last night. Had another one in this series.
Oh my goodness. And it wasn't the closer, at least this time, but you know, we were on, we being me, I was on the Padres money line and, you know, Michael King left with a 3-2 lead. I kind of was on, you know, because of the starting pitching matchup. Little did I know that Adrian Morejon and Wandy Peralta were going to have an utter total meltdown. The Yankees scored 10 runs in the 8th inning. So big comeback there by the Yankees. Meanwhile, today, Dylan Cease, his struggles did not cease against the Pirates. He only got through 4 innings, and it's the Pirates we're talking about, a team that has really struggled to put together any offense all season long. He only threw 91 pitches in 4 innings. I don't think it gets better today. New York is, you know, obviously really good home team there, really good lineup. Plus one, you know, the WRC plus is 140 at home. And he's going up against Max Fried too. ER estimators say he's a, get confounded by Fried because of his low K percentage. He limits the long ball well. We're going to fade Dylan Cease with our bet because I just don't like the price on the 185 money line. I do think the Yankees win, but I'm going to take the under 5.5 strikeouts on Dylan Cease at +110.
All right, let's move on to your team, Jeff, the Cincinnati Reds. They are in Atlanta. We got the Braves as a -122 favorite on the money line. Low total here at 7.5. And a big reason for that, one of the best pitchers in baseball so far this year, Hunter Green on the hill for Cincinnati going up against Grant Holmes. Now you got a whole bevy of props for this game, Jeff, so take it away.
Yeah, so my take here is the Reds lineup is not that strong on the road. We talked about a little bit about this on Monday, how they compiled those road numbers in the past against Baltimore, against Miami, and especially against Colorado, well, especially against Baltimore in that 24-run game on that Sunday afternoon that one time. In the last two games, after getting shut down by the Braves, their WRC plus on the road has dropped from 120 to 110. Meanwhile, Grant Holmes is really good. People don't realize what a good pitcher Grant Holmes is. Struck out 9 Dodgers last time out, and he's had a ridiculous schedule so far. He's faced the Dodgers twice. He's faced the Padres. He's faced the Phillies. He's faced the Diamondbacks. He's had Minnesota and Toronto qualify as his easier starts. And remember, he dominated against Toronto in that Toronto start on the road. The Reds strike out 23.7% of the time on the road. The Braves are 11-5 at home. All this kind of pushes everything in favor of the Braves, even with Hunter Green on the mound for the Reds. I love Hunter Green. He's great. He'll keep this game close. But I like Holmes's over 6.5 Ks. That's an alt line at +190. I like Holmes over 17.5 outs recorded at -105. And I like the money line for Atlanta at -122. Because if you get into the bullpens, I think the Braves are better than the Reds there too. Mm-hmm.
We got some G-Bank best bets coming for you in a moment, Jeff. But one more game I want to hit with you. Texas Rangers at the Boston Red Sox. Boston -135 on the money line tonight. Total in this game at 9.5. Tyler Molly going up against Tanner Houck. I know you have a play on the total. What are we looking at?
So you would think after the Rangers pounded out 16 hits against the Red Sox yesterday that we should be leaning towards the over. Tanner Houck's got an ERA over 6. However, Houck, in those three games since that Tampa disaster start that he had early on, he's got a 350 ERA and a 1.00 whip since that game. Malley is due for a correction, but a correction to what? He's got a 119 ERA. He's had 0 homers allowed, a 230 BABIP. He's definitely going to have a higher ERA. But like you look at xERA on Baseball Savant, it's got still like a 3.2 ERA for him. Suggest that it should be a pretty decent game. You kind of put that together. I think that total is too high at 9.5. I'm going to go under 9.5 at -120.
Our best bets of the night are brought to you by GBank. You can get the GBank Visa signature card today. While most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances, even when you put your own money on the card, not GBank. GBank treats gaming transactions as purchases, so you're saving 3 to 5% on cash advance fees and gaming transactions right there. And with GBank, you're earning 1% cashback rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions, plus 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. Apply now at VSIN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. Jeff, your best bet of the night. I know you're going to Major League Baseball. What do you like?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the Mets on that money line bet, -125. I have a feeling, Nick, that I'm going to be taking Mets futures or Mets bets a lot whenever they have a low line like this here. I think even though they're on the road, I like them at -125.
All right, I'll give you a few of my leans in the NBA. Liked a lot of what Alex Barutha gave us earlier in the show. Give me the Celtics team total tonight, over 110.5. Scored 100 in regulation in game one, despite terrible shooting, despite Porzingis being sick, despite Jason Tatum taking terrible shots throughout the second half. Only 39 points in that second half. I think we see a much better effort tonight from the Celtics. Give me SGA over 6.5 assists. We're going back to the well on Aaron Gordon. Also over 6.5 rebounds. 14 boards for Aaron Gordon in game one. Getting that same number for game two. We will take it. That's going to wrap the Wednesday edition of Prop Points. Stay tuned here on VSiN. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next.